Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, June 15th, 2013. This is episode 987. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Ting.com. Ting is a new mobile phone provider that makes sense. You'll save money with Ting because you only pay for what you use, and Ting doesn't require a contract. Plus, you can put unlimited devices on a single pooled plan. To save $25 on your first Ting device, visit techguy.ting.com. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. It's now time to talk. Yes, we gather together each day, each week at this time, to talk of important things. The computer, the internet, the cell phone, the home theater. Yes, this is the Tech Guy Show, where every week we talk about technology. Oh my gosh, how do you find anything to talk about? They ask. I don't, you know. Fortunately, they keep inventing stuff. We keep having stuff. There was a big event this week. Actually, there were two big events this week. There was Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference, and they announced some stuff. And then there was the E3 Gaming Expo in Los Angeles. That's the big chance for a lot of companies to announce new game titles. And, of course, Sony and Microsoft both have new consoles, so they talked a lot about the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox One, which will both be out later this year, probably just in time for the holiday buying season. And it's, you know, it's pretty competitive between these guys. You notice I didn't say anything about Nintendo. They're kind of in the mix, but they seem to be fading. You can see them in the rearview mirror waving forlornly. Goodbye. Goodbye. I don't know what Nintendo's going to do, frankly. They still, I guess the kids like it. There's a certain nostalgia factor. They came out with the Wii U last year, and that was strange, to say the least. And I think they've sold, you know, 20 or 30,000 of them. But they still don't have high def. You know, they're kind of far behind, I think, at this point. But let's start. Let's not. We'll save the gaming for later, and certainly I'll take calls on that. Oh, well, let me give you the phone number, 888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. You'll be talking to Heather H-Bomb in there. She's taking the calls. Salute. She's in honor of Apple's new operating system, she's wearing her cheetah shirt. Or is that a leopard print? Is there a difference? I don't even know. It looks like a leopard print.
I have never thought about it that deeply.
The funny thing is, Apple
says grr.
Apple said we would hate that. Basically, they've run out of big cats. Yeah. They've used all the big cats. And they said, our next operating system, we would hate to have to hold up the operating system because of a lack of big cats. So at first he said, so we're going to call it OS X Sea Lion, which made the crowd kind of go, what? And some people cheered, and then they were kind of embarrassed when they realized he was joking. But then they did something I think a little odd. They named it after, they're going to start naming it after California landmarks. And the first one they chose is a little beach. You ever been to Mavericks? It's down the coast a piece.
I guess I haven't.
Between Half Moon Bay and Santa Cruz. I went to high school in Santa Cruz, so we used to hang out at Mavericks. You'd go watch it. No, I never surfed it because, you know, it's deadly. You'd have to be a very pro surfer to surf Mavericks. Big break. Very big break. But it is, a California landmark. Although I would bet you there, you know, a lot of Californians have no idea what Mavericks is. And maybe they chose the name because it also has that dual meaning of a maverick, right? A thought leader. John McCain.
Yes. Take the word back from the politicians.
First thing that leaps to mind.
Yeah.
You don't really go to a Mavericks unless you're a serious surfer. It's a scary place, and it's not even that hospitable. It's a rocky coast. It's actually just north of Half Moon Bay. It's not between Santa Cruz and Half Moon Bay. It's a little bit north of Half Moon Bay on Pillar Point. surfers go there not in the summer, but in the winter. It is a one of the world's best big wave destinations, they say. Only a select few are willing to risk the hazardous, sometimes deadly conditions at Mavericks. Doesn't really lend itself. People, many have died there, actually. It's a very scary, scary place. It might not be, if you really think about it, the best name for an operating system. Because those waves crash. People, and it's dangerous, and it's scary, and it's only for pros. But let's not, we won't belabor that. The next version of OS X will be out sometime in the fall, probably to go along with the strangest thing that Apple announced, which is a new Mac Pro. The Mac Pro is a high-end computer not bought by many. It's mostly bought by video editors, photographers, designers, movie makers, 3D movie makers, people like that who really need a lot of horsepower. It was their tower, Apple's tower computer, and it was certainly the most expensive. Somebody in the chat room said, big cats kill people too. That's a good point. Wasn't really thinking about that. Anyway, the Mac Pro won't be out till the fall as well, probably the same time as OS X Mavericks. But it is a Maverick-looking computer. It's only 10 inches tall. So if you stand up a piece of paper, it's shorter than that. It's an inch shorter than a piece of paper. It's kind of hard to tell when you look at it because it looks like, I don't know what it looks like, the monolith out of 2001 or a trash can. It's an interesting design. It is probably not anything anybody was hoping for. People who use the Mac Pro currently really probably just said, I don't care about the design. Give me the latest chips, the latest, most powerful stuff, and I'll be happy. It doesn't need to look like something that no one ever saw before, but this does. It's crazy. Crazy looking. And it will be crazy expensive, I think. One big brick of solid extruded aluminum that's anodized to look black, not painted. It has a lot of power in it. We don't know exactly because the Intel chips that power it, they weren't clear about, and they won't be out really till the fall, I would expect. There'll be Xeon server-grade chips. Very fast memory, very fast hard drives. No more spinning hard drives. No room for spinning hard drives. That's the funny thing. Here's this beautiful design. It looks like a black bullet, 9-inch tall bullet on your desk. And but if you run any hard drives or any extra stuff, you have to hang off cables off of it, and there'll be little satellites all around it. Has one big fan at the top, and it draws air through the core in the middle. So it's an interesting design that way. I don't understand it. I really don't know who they made this for, because it's going to be crazy expensive, especially if you want to add hard drives to this thing. They also announced the new iOS, iOS 7. I'm going to start sounding like a hater here, but I hate it. It's ugly. Now, I don't use an iPhone, so I'm not too worried about it, but it looks like Nicki Minaj designed it. It's all candy, cotton, candy pastels, and it's very strange looking. I don't really get it. I really don't get it. A lot of the features on this are catch-up features to what other operating systems have been doing. Even operating systems as old as the Palm Pre, the WebOS operating system, the multitasking looks just like it. They caught up to a dead operating system. The control center looks just like Android, just like Android. They're big on these translucencies, which show off the pastel colors. Very expensive in terms of CPU time, by the way. They're calculating all that in real time. But then there's some innovation, some interesting innovation. When you tilt the phone, the background moves faster than the foreground, so it looks like it's kind of a 3D parallax thing. It's kind of wild looking. They did add the radio thing we were talking about to compete with Pandora. They made it only a few minutes mentioned, but iTunes Radio will have free streaming radio, ad supported, or for $25 a year if you already pay for iTunes Match. You're paying for it. You get ad-free version of this. It's a Pandora killer. It's pretty sweet, pretty nice. updated apps like iPhoto or the photo app, I should say, the gallery app, the camera. But boy, I wonder how people are going to take to this design. It is ugly. Oof. Oof. Let's talk about it. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, look at my shirt. Ooh. Ting. Well, that's a lousy ting. Let me try it with a Twit mug. Maybe it'll be more of a better ting. Ting! Sounds like I'm hitting a piece of coal with a hammer. It's supposed to sound like a little bell reminding you about Ting, the wonderful cell phone carrier, the new mobile phone service that is, they call it a no BS mobile phone service. I hope you'll excuse the adult usage there. No bad stuff, no BS. Ting is a MVNO. That means they are mobile virtual network operator. They resell Sprint service. So if you've got good Sprint service, you're a great candidate for Ting. Ting is less expensive. There are no contracts. There's no early termination fee. It's all month to month. You never pay a penalty for using more data than you said you would. You get rebates for using less. So you only pay for what you use. I want you to go to techguy.ting.com and find out more. TechGuy.com. That's me, not tech good, techguy.ting.com. And the best thing to do when you do this is to play with the Ting pricing thing, whatever they call it. Look at the plans, because you will be impressed. It's actually the best thing to do would bring your current cell phone bill and do the savings calculator. So you can actually look at what your plan is, what the bill is, and you can see how much you'd save. But I think you'll get a pretty good idea. What do you just, you know, what do you spend? $100 a month a phone, something like that? $80 a month a phone? Well, let's see how much it would cost. First of all, with Ting, which is super cool, you can have as many phones as you want on a single shared plan. So for families or small businesses, that's really great. Let's say it's a family of four phones. And, you know, these are just suggestions. Let's say 1,000 minutes shared, remember. 1,000 text messages shared. We'll put 3 gigabytes of data. Now, you can always get more or less, and you're not going to pay this, but I'm just going to show you that for that, all of that would be $107 for the family, all four of you. So I think you could see there'd be a big reduction in cell phone costs. But here's the beauty part. You use more minutes, no problem. They just bump you up to the next level. They don't charge you a penalty. You use less, they actually rebate you the difference. So you only pay for what you use. You never pay a penalty for using more than you said you would. All these plans include tethering, hotspotting, and, of course, all the usual stuff like caller ID, three-way calling, picture and video messaging and voicemail and all of that. There are no hidden charges, no recovery fees, no ETFs. You get a powerful online account control panel so you know exactly how everything's going at any time. You want to check up on the kids. It's easy to do that, by the way. Great no-hold customer support, 855-TING-FDW. If you call during business hours, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern, a real person empowered to solve your problem will pick up the phone, but you often don't need to because they've got great help, active customer forums, very powerful ticketing system, video tutorials, video startup guides. Go to the customer forums, read around, just see how people like, or look at their Twitter feed, TING-FTW. You'll see people love Ting. You will too. Save $25 on your first Ting device. By the way, they have a variety of devices, new and used, and you can, in some cases, bring your existing Sprint phone to Ting. Save $25 on your first Ting device. Go to techguy.ting.com. techguy.ting.com. See how Ting saves you money and just makes you feel better. Wouldn't you like to love your cell phone company? We love them. No, you will too. TechGuy.ting.com. Look at the coverage map. But if you know that Sprint works well in your area, I think you'll know exactly how Ting will work for you. Yes, they have the Galaxy S4. A lot of all the newer phones. Very strange days. Very strange days. We were talking about Apple's announcements. I didn't even get to. They were so much they talked about. We didn't even get to the new MacBook Airs. No new MacBook Pros, though. We were really sure. I was saying, hold off, because there'll be a new MacBook Pro. They didn't announce that. They did announce a new AirPort Extreme, which is their Wi-Fi, their overpriced, highly overpriced Wi-Fi router. But at least it's cool looking. I mean, it looks kind of like it would go with the garbage can Mac Pro. It's a little shorter. It's a rounded corner. Oh, wait a minute. Johnny, note to Johnny Ive, didn't we get rid of rounded corner? Oh, I guess we still have rounded corner. Rounded corner tower. And it supports the new 802.11 AC, which will be the shortest lived 802.11 since 802.11. I don't know. Because AD is coming. We talked about that last week. There is a next generation of Wi-Fi called AC, which you're starting to see manufacturers make. But then somebody called last week and said, you know, you should just skip it because AD is going to be better. And it's going to be here shortly after. That's a question for the audience this week. Does this stuff change too fast? Would you like to slow down a little bit? Not that we can, but I'm just wondering. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the number. 888-82-75536, toll-free from anywhere. H-Bomb Heather H. will take your call. Do you have, in fact, let me talk to her right now. Is there something, is there somebody I should talk to right away, immediately?
Like they're wetting their pants and they
like they're wetting their pants.
They said, emergency.
I don't want to, you know, I mean, sometimes you can be on hold for a little bit on this show. Is there anybody with an emergency?
We don't want it to seem like tech support, right?
No, that's the problem.
I'm sure all
Heather used to work for 11 years. Heather worked for Dr. Dean Adell. And there's this, it was very similar. One of the reasons I was really thrilled we could get you is because it's the same problem. At Dr. Dean, people would say, my bunions hurt. I need, I have an itch on my side. And those are the calls you filter out, right? We have the same thing. My printer won't work. That's a big one.
Right, right. With Adele, sometimes you're like, hey, look, you really should call 911. With these people, I'm like, I'd rather you stay and talk to Leo than call 611.
That's a good point. Hey, right? You should really go see the Geek Squad because this is Leo can't help you.
All right, so I'm going to say David in Kansas City just because what he does affects lots and lots of people.
I want to hear about that. David in Kansas City, your first Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks, Heather. Hi, David.
Hi, Leo. You know, I didn't actually have to go to the bathroom until you and Heather
started. Now he's got to go. Well, ask your question quickly. Or just take the phone with you. It's okay. We're all friends. All right. We're all friends here.
Well, I work for the Kansas City Zoo, and we have a lobby auditorium sort of where we want to, over the PA system, play music all day long that has announcements overlaid on top of it.
Uh-huh.
Now, the problem is we want that to kind of automatically start at a certain time because those announcements will be timed throughout the day, and we don't want somebody to forget to go and turn that PA system on. So is there a way we could, maybe using an iPod, kind of set that on an automatic timer somehow so it just turns on our, you know, 8-hour playlist and it just runs throughout the day?
And so you would pre-record the vocal announcements at the exact right time, providing that the track began at the right time.
Exactly. So if the, all the music, all the playlists started at, say, 8:30 in the morning.
Right. Everything would have be timed down.
Right. We would have music playing till 10, and then the announcements would start at 10 o'clock.
Well, yeah, that's an easy thing to do. What you want an iPod? I mean, you could do it with a computer. An iPod might be a little trickier. Let me think. No, you could use an alarm. Oh, the problem with the alarms on the iPod is they turn off, I think, after a while. Let me see if the chat room has a suggestion. Do you do not want to dedicate a computer to it?
I suppose we could. The real problem, though, is getting it started at the right time every single day so that a person
No, that's easy. You just leave the computer on and you can have these scheduled. All computers will allow you to schedule something to start at a particular time, or Winamp would do it. The question on iPods have alarms in them, I don't know. I've never used as an alarm system, but somebody with an iPod, can you tell me if you set an alarm on the iPod? In other words, you say, I want this playlist to play at 8:30 a.m. Will it just keep going? I don't know. I've never tried that. I bet you. Yes. Okay. Here's the deal. Get an iPod Touch. Because then you can get an alarm app that will play your music or play a particular playlist. And I know that there are alarm apps on the iPod Touch that will just keep playing. There's quite a few, actually.
Okay, so it would start at a certain time during the day and then would just run on its own until we told it to stop.
Until somebody went in and said, stop already, I'm done.
Yeah.
I think a touch is a good idea.
Okay.
Now, if you could also do this with, there are many Android devices that would do this, like a Nexus 7 might even be cheaper than a Touch, and you could do the same thing on a Nexus 7.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah. We will.
So what you want to do is an alarm app, and the only question, and most alarm apps will allow you to play music playlists, so you can create a playlist, or even a single recording, I don't know, with all the stuff in it, depending on how much energy you want to put into it. And then you just have to make sure it doesn't turn off after an hour. Some alarms turn off after an hour. They figure, well, I'm not going to keep playing forever. Effin Dunn used to work at the – he's in our chat room. He used to work at the L.A. Zoo, did something very similar. I think we could have an inter-zoo collaboration here.
That'd be great.
That's probably a better idea than an iPod Touch would be just a cheap Android tablet like the Nexus 7. Then you have a little more control over it. It's basically
okay, and that would work just fine with the headphone jack, too, and everything?
Yeah. It works with the headphone jack and all that.
Great.
Good. And now what songs? Are you going to put things like – the baby elephant walk on? What kind of music are you going to put on that?
Yeah, well, we don't want to annoy our food and beverage staff too much, Yeah, I'm thinking the I Talk to the Animal song, right?
You could talk to the... That would be annoying. Animals. I love
exactly.
It. Hey, it's great to talk to you, David. Thank you. Yeah, I think probably the best solution. And now it's just a question of finding the right app. There's so many great alarm apps. Double Twist makes a very good alarm clock app that I like a lot. And in fact, you could even have schedules using that. You could play different, you could have, it's a Thursday. This is our Thursday music schedule, our Friday music schedule, that kind of
Ooh,
thing.
I like that.
All right. Hey, thanks for the call. It's good to talk to you.
Thank you. I love the network. I try to keep up with all the shows as much as I can. It's great.
That's wonderful. Are you the AV guy at the Kansas City Zoo?
Not by choice. I'm quickly becoming it, though.
Yeah, don't solve this too well. Then it'll be a job for life.
Exactly.
Thanks, David. Bill in Orlando, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Leo. Number of years ago, I had a trial version of Network Magic.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided at that time I didn't want to use it. But now I want to go back and use it, and I find out it's no longer available.
Yeah, Network Magic was a nice idea, but it's not really needed anymore. The idea of it was it would kind of set up your network settings automatically, and you wouldn't have to mess with it. But it got purchased by Cisco, and they stopped making it. Let me see if I can find something similar. Hang on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's an interesting story. The song that you're hearing right now, Tom's Diner by Suzanne Vega. This is actually a remix that was done and made it a big hit, but the original version that she recorded was pure a cappella. And it was used to design the MP3 compression format. A guy named Karl Heinz Brandenburg, who invented MP3 while he was working at a German company called Fraunhofer, he was trying to find a compression technology that would get music down a lot, by a factor of 10 or 11, but still not have audible, degradation. He did it in kind of an interesting way. The way MP3 works is, in theory, the music theory that behind it is that when some frequencies are playing, your ear doesn't hear other frequencies that are related. It only hears the primary frequency. So if you know that, then you could design a compression algorithm that just takes out the music on those other frequencies. It just says, well, you don't need it because the ear won't hear it. And if you do this cleverly enough, you can have a very highly compressed file. It's lossy in the sense that you're taking part of the music away, but it won't be degraded too much because the ear would have heard it anyway. So he listened. Now, he wanted to make sure the vocals sounded good, so he needed something that was a human voice that he could use and test this. He would tweak it, then play it and compress it and play it again, and he used that song. Played over and over again till he made sure that Suzanne Vega's voice sounded perfect before they would release MP3. And he did a pretty good job. I mean, MP3 is, it's not perfect. They've made improvements since. In fact, the company Fraunhofer came out with AAC later, MP3 Pro and then AAC. But it's pretty good. Pretty good. It's a reference. It was a reference track. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number. We were looking for a replacement for something that people used a lot in the old days. The olden days, because remember when you first, the first time routers came out, this was pretty complicated stuff. This was stuff that you needed an IT professional to do. I mean, routers, switches, networking was really designed for the office. But as it turned out, more and more people got multiple computers. They needed to figure out how to take a single internet access point and make it work over a few computers. So we all kind of had to learn networking technology overnight. So there were some tools designed to speed this up, to make it a little bit easier. And one of these, it was very popular, was called Network Magic. You just run it, it would do it all and set it up. Network Magic was owned by Linksys, which was sold to Cisco, which put the whole thing out of business last year. They stopped making it. Although, I guess you could still download it. I'm not sure I'd really recommend it. I think the reason that they put it out of its misery is, frankly, you shouldn't need it. And Network Magic would do things to a computer that would cause issues if you lost it or didn't have it. You know, it would do things you didn't know it was doing and so forth. So I generally recommend, if you're getting a new router, a new Wi-Fi access point, you follow the instructions to set it up. They're pretty straightforward, and you leave it at that. There's nothing else you need to mess around with. Most systems, it's best, in fact, to follow the prescribed setup and leave it at that. The one thing I might add, and I think most systems do this now, but there are some things that we've learned subsequently, and even Network Magic and other similar programs didn't know about this. There are a few security things I would recommend. If you're on a wireless access point, for instance, I would turn on WPA encryption. That keeps other people off your network and makes sure that nobody can see what you're doing. You're not broadcasting your data through the air unencrypted. WPA. You should probably also turn off, if you can, WPS. That's that push button to have people join your network. That's insecure. We've found flaws in that. You should definitely turn off UPnP. Are you writing all this down? Don't worry. I'll tell you where you can get it without writing it down. UPnP is also a very dangerous problem. In fact, there are a large number of routers nowadays that if universal plug-and-play, UPnP, is turned on, these routers can be modified and, in effect, their security features turned off from the outside by any bad guy. That's not good. So turn off UPnP. Turn off WPS. There are routers that does nothing. It doesn't help. They're still insecure. Oh, well. At least try. Turn on WPA2 if you've got it. One, WPA is fine by itself. And then change the name of the router. It shouldn't be the default because people know how to get through to some of these. So make it something else. Make it this, you know, Tom's Diner. My name is Luca. You could go through Suzanne Vega songs and just name them. And that way you'll know, but no one else will, you know. Don't use your address. Don't say there's a big, nice, fancy computer inside here, so come steal it. FBI surveillance van, not a bad choice. NSA watching you, not a bad choice. But just something that you know that won't encourage people to try to bang on it. And do change the administrative password, too. Something you remember. It doesn't have to be complicated or hard, just not the default. And then you're in pretty good shape. Then you're in pretty good shape. We do have someone around here. We have not figured out who it is who has an access point named FBI surveillance van. I think he's inside the building. So you don't need Network Magic. Do it yourself. You're smarter than you think. Steve in Detroit, the Motor City, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Steve.
Hello, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing okay on this very sunny, beautiful day here in Detroit.
How nice.
Thank you very much. I'm planning to buy an iPod Touch. I mean, in their different feature, but recently I've been thinking of saving my money to get a separate MP3 player as a backup because I don't want to carry my iPod Touch around. So just to listen to podcasts and all that. And I was looking on the websites and online circulars for probably the best, cheapest MP3 player, not Apple product, you know what I mean? And I've been searching and searching, and I was just was reading the reader comment session, and I was suggesting what kind of non-Apple MP3 player you want to recommend.
This is not a question we get much anymore, mostly because people just buy iPods. But you're right. If you just want to listen to podcasts, you don't need to spend a lot of money. SanDisk, which makes flash memory, makes an excellent, inexpensive MP3 player. Flash memory, of course, because that's what they do, called the Sansa, S-A-N-S-A. The clip is kind of looks like a little clip-on iPod. It's small. They can get 2, 4, or 8 gigabytes, come in a variety of colors. It's compatible with most formats except for those specific Apple formats. You know, you're not going to play copy-protected Apple music. But if you're listening to podcasts, they're all MP3 anyway. You won't have any trouble with that. So, you know, remember, you're going to have to figure out how to download them yourself. You can't use iTunes. You know, one of the reasons that people buy iPods is because of iTunes. But I think the Sansa is a very good, very inexpensive MP3 player. They're fine. They're good. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. John in Charlotte, North Carolina. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, John. Uh-oh. John, your battery's dying or something's wrong with your...
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, there you go. Would you bang it?
No, it's an old corded phone. What do you...
Oh, yeah, cords. That'll kill you every time.
Yeah. Oh, goodness gracious. That new Apple computer, by the way, looks like a great cup holder.
It's the strangest looking thing. You know, I've seen pictures of cats curled up in it. It's too small, really, for unless you have a kitten to curl up a cat. But, yeah, people are looking at it going, what the heck is Apple thinking? What the heck? And I have to tell you, we haven't heard the end of this iOS 7. I think people, when they see it, you know, a lot of people are just going to install it. You always do, right? When you get the new firmware comes out on your iPod or iPhone, they're going to install it and go, ew, you just put cotton candy in my phone. Hey, hang on. We got to take a break. Can you hang on for a little bit?
Sure can. Thanks.
All right. You're next when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello. Hey, I do want to talk about the NSA privacy scandal. We will talk. It's so complicated. I'll save that for next hour. But there is some interesting stuff going on with that. And it's certainly germane to anybody who uses the internet and uses technology. What does our federal government know? What do they collect? They're not saying. And of course, because of the Patriot Act, people that they get information from are not allowed to say either. Both Facebook and Google have petitioned the federal government saying, hey, can't we just say how many of these requests we get? We don't want to say what they're about. We just want to say how many we're getting, and that remains to be seen. I suspect that the feds will say, no, you can't say anything at all about anything. But we'll talk a little bit about what the federal government is doing, spying on internet traffic, what they know, what they don't know, what the likelihood is. Nobody's saying, but I think we have some good suppositions. Meanwhile, let's continue on. We've got John on the line from Charlotte, North Carolina. Hi, John.
Hey, thank you. I got an easy question for you. How long can companies keep my email?
Long as they want.
Okay.
So, and here's a, now this is actually relevant to the whole PRISM discussion. Federal law says that after 6 months, that email is no longer yours. It's been abandoned. And anything that you've written on Gmail, Hotmail, you know, one of the big selling points Google had for Google Mail, Gmail, is never delete anything. Keep it forever because you never know. You might want to search through it again. Well, anything older than 6 months old, the feds, the IRS, and everybody else says, and apparently federal law says, is fair game. They don't need a warrant or anything. They just gather it up. It's abandoned.
Well, mine's more in line of a free trial. I used a service 5 years ago, signed up for their free trial, determined the service no longer met my needs within that trial period, canceled the subscription, moved on. A few weeks ago, I thought, well, let's see if they've changed anything. Looked at it again, and they've still got my email.
Sure. What was the name of the company?
It's Squarespace.
Okay. Yeah, you mean they have the actual email address or the contents of the email?
The email address. Because when I tried to try and see if anything...
Oh, I see what you're saying. I want to create a new account. They said, no, you already have an account.
Exactly. Yeah. And I'm like, that's 5 years. Are you kidding?
Well, there's no rule. There's no rule. Boy, you must have joined them when they first started because they're only about 5 years old. And by the way, a good company. But as far as I know, they don't discard these addresses. One of the reasons they don't is because they have free trial offers. If you don't have an account, they have deals. If you've never had an account, for new accounts. So they keep those emails for a while probably so that you can't destroy an account, create a new one, get the benefit of the new sign-up deal again and again. A lot of companies do that. So you're saying, how long can a company keep my email address? Well, they got it. They can keep it as long as they want.
Okay.
There's no rule. There's no rule of law that says you must discard the email address. It's marketing information, right?
It is.
Yeah. And when you give out, you know, marketing information to people, that stuff has value. I think you can assume that nobody's going to get rid of it. They can, they can do something with it. So why would they? It's like, why would I throw away money? Yeah. I do like Squarespace. I don't think they're bad guys, so I would not worry that they have your email. If you're not getting not getting spam from them, things like that, I wouldn't worry about it. Michelle in Sherman Oaks, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Fine. I'm like a real novice, so I don't even know if my question's a good one. But my daughter has a Dell desktop, 2004.
Okay.
The internet is terribly slow. Even though we've got AT&T high speed, in quotes.
Right.
She has, and we wanted to transfer some of her programs to another Dell computer.
Right.
Which is a little newer.
Right.
And it's called Jukebox by Music Match. She has like 800 songs on there.
That's long gone.
Yeah, and she
I remember the Music Match Jukebox.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a great company back in 2004.
Yeah.
I don't think they're around anymore.
We can transfer her music to the newer version of the Dell that I have in my room that I would give her.
Okay, so a couple of things. The internet's slow because it's a 9-year-old computer. And the rule with computers...
We wanted to get rid of it.
Yeah. The rule with computers that I made up, and I have no justification for. You know, they always say 7 human years to every dog year.
Yeah.
I think it's 15 human years to every computer year. So you have a 9-year-old computer, it's 135 years old.
Okay.
I think if you were 135 years old, you'd be slow on the internet too.
Thank you.
What's that? Oh, it's an email. Oh.
Not that old.
Slow down, you guys. Yeah, 135 is pretty old.
Yeah, and, I got this advertisement, from Groupon that said, get Carbonite. It's a $35 deal for a $100 cloud.
Yeah, Carbonite's good. They're an advertiser, we should mention.
Yeah,
they're a sponsor.
They are an advertiser.
Yeah, they're good. So you could use that, although, frankly, I think that's not necessary.
Okay.
So you've got a newer computer. It's not brand new. It's still...
newer.
2007, you said?
Faster.
How? 2007, you said?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so 6 times 15 is that... That's only 95 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah! I can outrun you! So, don't expect super fast internet. The reason is the internet is, they're assuming... As apps do, as operating systems do, that you have more and more powerful computers over time. And so they put more burden on the computer. And so older computers just say, well, I wasn't designed to handle all of this.
Yeah, exactly.
Like
okay.
Moving the apps is different. Now, okay, she's using Music Match.
Right.
That's just a player app. So the question really is the music that's in Music Match is, I don't know if that's copy protected. If it's MP3s, I think it's just MP3s that you could just copy and play with iTunes or something more modern.
Yeah, I think so.
I don't think you need to have any special player. Now, you can. There is a website, Old Apps, oldapps.com, that
okay.
You can download Music Match, the most recent versions from 2006.
Okay.
It's been out of business for years.
Okay.
If you needed Music Match to play it, the thing I would do is figure out where Music Match is storing those songs. You might have to do a little, digging on the computer and then copy those hundreds of songs onto a device. My recommendation is to get something that you can copy the not the operating system, but the data from that old computer.
Just the data. That's all.
Yeah, you don't want the apps. Even the apps you probably don't want. You really just want the data.
She just wants the music.
It'll be good to have. Okay, well, if it's only, it's what, six? You said 600 songs? That's not going to take up too much room.
Yeah, 800 songs.
800 songs. Most songs are about 3 or 4 megabytes. So you're talking a very small amount of data, less than a gigabyte of data.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
you know what you could do is, and these are cheap, just get a USB key and copy the stuff onto that. If you want
a USB key?
Yeah, just one of these little thumb drives. A gigabyte thumb drive, that you get that in a cereal box these days.
Oh, okay.
They're giving that. That you probably somebody pay you to take that.
Oh, okay.
I have about 20 of them. I'd love to give you. No,
yeah,
but the other, but you might want it. What you might want to do is go to a computer store and buy something like a USB external drive. It's a little bit bigger that could be used for local backup, ongoing. Because you know what, I'm nervous because all of that stuff, there's one copy on that really old computer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So you know, you really want to make a backup and not, and then keep the backup as well as the new computer, right?
Right.
So I think that just a little external drive. It could be a thumb drive. I have on my keychain 32 gigabytes. So it's
32.
Not. Yeah,
okay.
I mean it's not a lot. A gigabyte's not a lot.
Yeah.
So something like that, or a USB external drive. You plug in, you drag all the data, find those music match files, drag them over, put them on the new computer. You could probably play it with the Windows Media Player that's already on the computer. If you can't.
Windows
Media Player. Yeah. If you can't, I don't remember what format Music Match.
It's called Jukebox Music Maker.
Yeah. What it does is you put CDs in, and it turns it into digital music on your hard drive.
Yes.
And then it's a player. I used it. I loved Music Match. Yahoo had it. I bought it. But but they put it out of its misery a long time ago. And the only thing I don't remember is the format that Music Match used. I think it's probably a standard format. Oh, hey, thanks to the chat room. We'll put this in the show notes. Toronto Mario has posted, or actually Bert has posted a link from Apple, moving your Music Match songs into your iTunes library, how to do it. So
you found that on where?
We'll put it on our show notes at techguylabs.com. It's an Apple knowledge base tech support article. So that will pretty much tell you where it is, where the files are, where to put them. iTunes is free. There are lots of other choices. I'm just looking. The chat room says they used MP3s, so it should be very easy to move it over. No trouble at all.
That's
techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. Leo Laporte. I'm the Tech Guy.
For hour number 2 of the Tech Guy radio program, broadcast coast to coast and nationwide on the Excellence in Broadcast Network.
Dum, dum, bum. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet, cell phones and camcorders, home theater and all that jazz. Look who's here. We didn't expect him today because we knew he was taking his lovely wife on a mystery trip somewhere around the world. Johnny Jett, our travel with technology expert, johnnyjett.com. He told us last week he had to get a yellow fever shot. And now we're trying to figure out where he is. In fact, for those of you who are watching at home, he looks like he's in a tent somewhere. You're going to give us a clue as to where
you're dark. It's very dark.
Okay, late at night.
It's 10 o'clock at night here, okay. And I got some special guests to come in. Come real close. All right, can you see these guys?
Wow. Are they Maasai?
Yes, you got it.
Maasai warriors. Wow. You know, because they're very tall and beautiful people. Wow. Where are you? Are you in Kenya? Where are you?
I am in Kenya. I'm in the Masai Mara at the Kempinski Hotel on a Mikado safari, and it's amazing. Today, we just arrived last night. Today, we went on 2 game drives, saw a leopard, a cheetah.
Wow.
Everything. And hippos, whatever you can. Almost all Big Five.
So. Well, now we're going to wave. Everybody wave and say hi. To Johnny Jett's friends in Kenya. Wow, that is exciting. Is Natalie having fun?
Oh, yeah. She's having fun.
Yeah,
it's late at night
great.
Right now.
That's great.
So,
well, good. Well, thank you for being here, Johnny.
Thanks for having me.
Vacation. It's very nice of you.
It's not vacation. I'm working, but I got a good website for you.
All right.
Actually, earlier this week, I was in London, or actually Southampton, England. The Duchess of Cambridge christened the Royal Princess Ship. which was amazing. So I got all kinds of news, but while
they
I was
still
there,
do that, they still break a bottle of champagne on the bow and of that.
It was a $1,200 bottle of champagne.
Oh, it's probably
it was a monster magnum,
like a couple of million in that ship. So big deal, right?
Oh, it's $437 million, I think.
Yeah, there you go, half a billion here or there.
Oh yeah, but cool. Anyway, when I was there last week, we were talking about Plane Finder.
Yeah, and by the way, GeoGuessr, we can't stop playing GeoGuessr. What GeoGuessr fun awesome. That game is! I love it.
GeoGuessr is awesome. Well, this website is actually, I think it's done by Plane Finder, but it's called ShipFinder.co.
ShipFinder.co.
So it's basically the same premise, except it's on ships. So wherever you are in the world, you can track ships. It shows you all of them, and you click it, and it tells you, you know, where it's coming from, where it's going, the speed or the knots.
Now, are they all commercial cruise liners, or is it other ships?
No,
it's
cargo. It tells you what kind. It tells you what type
as
well.
So cool. It's cargo. If you look at the San Francisco Bay, all the boats coming and going out of the Golden Gate Bridge. There's Old Blue. There's the California Hornblower. That's actually a pleasure cruise that goes around inside the bay. That is really neat. What fun.
Yeah. I thought that was a
ShipFinder.co.
So everyone, I might have to change my website to Johnny Cruise.
Yeah. Well, I'm a big cruise fan, you know, and in fact, I'm going on a cruise of the Adriatic in about 3 months. So you'll see. I'll tell you what boat I'm on and people can watch as I sail around. How fun. Look at this. It's very busy right now in the Adriatic. A lot of boats.
It's summertime.
Yeah.
It's going to be a very busy time.
Crazy, crazy, crazy.
And also, while you're on your trip, my next thing is called eCases. So this is done by CascadeDesigns.com.
Okay.
I don't know if you ever heard of these guys. I met them actually at a travel conference a few months ago in Las Vegas. And I love their product. Actually, I learned about it 2 years ago, but they didn't really have a website. But it has a seal lock, so it's 100% submersible. And you can take it wherever you want, so you can put any kind of phone,
iPad. Why did you say this is good if I'm on a cruise? I don't need a submersible, I hope.
No, but when you're at the beach, you do.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it locks out all the sand, the water, and it's just, you know, you can put
these aren't suitcases. These are, you could put your phone in it.
It's for your phone or
and
your
you can
iPad.
Take underwater photos.
I love it. And you can type on your phone very easily. You can still talk on your phone, and it's wind resistant.
Wow, this is really neat. I might have to get something like this. That's have you right. taken pictures with an e-case on?
Yeah, I've taken many times.
And they look good?
Yeah, they look fine.
That's pretty neat. Wow, it seals it right up.
It's made of urethane.
And it says radio frequency.
Ultra clear urethane.
Wow.
And I think they start at $35. I mean, they range in all prices and sizes.
So if you cannot live without your phone, even underwater, now you can bring it along with you and play Angry Birds underwater.
Exactly.
Don't bother me.
If you don't want to get sand, sand's a killer for technology.
Hey, plug where you are once again, because the quality is amazing.
I'm gonna have these guys sing. You guys want to sing? All right, sing.
Awesome.
Give us a song. How's that, Leo?
That is so cool. I hope I don't have to pay royalties on that. that is really, they sound wonderful. Yeah.
These guys are awesome. Thank you.
So where? Woo! Woo! These guys grow very tall because they live on meat and blood and milk, and that's it. It's just all protein all the time. And
awesome.
Yeah, really an amazing culture. And what hotel are you at again? Let's give them a plug because the bandwidth's great.
Lodge. There's 12 rooms, and to get to your room, one of these guys have to walk you because all the wildlife. There's no fences.
Oh, you're in the veldt or whatever. Wow.
I'm in the middle side.
Wow.
And the big danger are hippos.
Hippos. Yeah, you know, people think hippos are cute and cuddly. They kill more people than sharks. They're deadly. Because
they are.
They just roll on you.
And we saw a thing, but
Say again, yeah, the lodge. What's the name of the lodge?
The Kempinski. It's Olare. It's run by Kempinski. It's a brand new lodge. It just opened up. I'm here for a couple nights, and then I move on to, actually, I'm going to Richard Branson's new place tomorrow.
Oh, boy, what a tough life. What a tough life you have.
Someone's got to live it.
That looks really great. Yeah, it's a Kempinski hotel out in the middle of nowhere, and it just opened, it looks like. It says it's a tented camp. I'm seeing it online here.
We have just luxury tents.
Johnny, don't get scared, but you're surrounded with 2 million wildebeest.
Oh, don't! I know. I saw most of them today. There's monkeys and baboons climbing on our tent right now.
Okay. Wow. So. Have fun, Johnny. It's so great to talk to you. I hope Natalie's having a good time. And thank your singers. Thank your team, because they sounded wonderful. Really sounded great.
They did.
Thank you, Johnny.
All right. Take care.
Take care. JohnnyJet.com. That's the place to go. Wasn't that wild?
Oh, my gosh.
Amazing.
I welled up. I'm so touched and amazed by...
Beautiful.
You know, that you were able to see those people across the globe.
Yeah. Yeah, that was via Skype, and the quality was... It sounded like they were right there. It's amazing.
I love those people.
JohnnyJet.com. You can follow him at JohnnyJet. And, you know, it reminded me a little bit of... Is Ladysmith Black Mombasa, the group that used to sing with Paul Simon.
Yeah.
They're from South Africa, very different tribe, different area. But kind of similar music. Beautiful. Beautiful. Wow. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number to call. We're going to continue on. Johnny joins us. Usually he joins us around this time, maybe a little bit later every week, to talk about great online sites. Two sites this time once again. Well, I don't know if it's a site, but the Kempinski Olare Mara, Masai Mara Tented Camp in Kenya, if you ever make it out that way. E-Case from Cascade Designs. I'm going to get one of those. That looks great for underwater photography. And finally, shipfinder.co. We'll put all that, and as always, everything we talk about, in the show notes on our website. James DeRujo is writing it all down. TechGuyLabs.com. More calls right after this. Stay here. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you want to talk about high tech. And from anywhere in the world, from Kenya, we get calls from all around the world. It was a lot of fun. I always enjoy that. From Jacksonville, Florida, it's Tom. He's next. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Hi, Tom.
Hello, Leo. How you doing?
Very well. How you doing?
Leo, I have been following you since before the Tech TV days. I go back to ZD TV.
Wow. The other day, I was wearing a ZD stands for Ziff Davis Television polo shirt that I got, and I realized, I was thinking about it, this shirt is more than 20 years old. Holy cow.
That's right.
Holy cow.
Well, Leo, I've got a question that you can possibly help me with. I was waiting for the MacBook Air with Retina display last week.
Yeah, we were hoping.
Yeah, so I'm at a point now where I've got to run Windows. I run Windows with Boot Camp, and I run OS X.
Okay.
And my question is, the new MacBook Air or the 13-inch MacBook Pro with Retina, is there...
I have the same exact question. Let me talk about what Apple announced and what they didn't announce. I'll be honest, I don't think, Tom, we were going to, or we will see for some time, a MacBook Air. That's the thinnest portable laptops from Apple. With a Retina display. I do not think we'll see that for several reasons. You're not going to get the battery life. You're not going to get the speed. So what they announced are two new MacBook Airs, an 11-inch and a 13-inch. These are their thinnest computers. They have standard resolution displays, which are fine. I mean, they're not tiny, you know, not terrible resolution, but they're not Retina. And they all have, both of them have the new Intel chip, the fourth generation i5 or i7 chip in them. We've been using the code name Haswell, and these are the Haswell ULT parts, which means very good battery life. In fact, Apple said that the 11-inch will get 9 hours of battery in normal use. And by the way, Apple's usually pretty accurate. And, you know, some companies really inflate these, but Apple's usually pretty good. They said the 13-inch will get 12 hours of battery life. That's amazing. So they'll be faster because of this new chipset. They'll have better graphics because of this new chipset, and they'll have better battery life. But they will not have a higher res display. So if the high res display is important to you, then that's not the right choice. Having said that, I think that we will see new MacBooks, the new MacBook Pros, at some time in the next few months. So if you say, well, I need a Retina, I'm willing to get the 13-inch Retina, I would wait. Because they did not upgrade the MacBook Pros at all on Monday. And I have to think, and I have the same conundrum, by the way. Exactly the same problem, Tom. I couldn't decide because I really wanted to get, what I wanted was what you wanted. There were rumors that we would see a 13-inch MacBook Pro that would be much thinner, would be almost an Air. But they didn't announce that. I think that they will at some point. I do believe that we will see a Haswell-based MacBook Pro with Retina display sometime before September. Can you wait a few months?
I'd even be willing to give up the 12 hours of battery life and take it down to 6 or 9.
Well, you would. That's right. You would. And remember that when you're doing a Retina display, you're pushing a ton of pixels. And so even on the 15-inch Retina, which I have, the original Retina MacBook Pro, there was lag when you're doing some things, some very graphic intensive things. So it's just really a question of what do you need. The 13-inch is 1440 by 900 pixels. The 11-inch is 1366 by 768. So they're half what you'll see in a comparable size screen for Retina.
Right. Now, just so you will know, I know you've been having your trials and tribulations with Windows 8.
Yes.
I have been running Windows 8 in boot camp on my old MacBook. No problems at all. I love Windows 8.
Oh, I'm glad to hear it. See, I'm not saying everybody hates it. In fact, you're using it in the least, in my opinion, desirable way without a touch screen.
Right.
And you still live with it.
Yeah, I think it's great. But then some of the software that I've got to run is not available on the Mac. So I've got to use my boot camp.
Yeah, okay, boot camp is a great solution.
I'm happy to talk to you, happy for the advice, and I will continue to listen and watch and think about you in the old ZDTV, Tech TV screensaver days.
Beautiful.
I will never forget Tilda, the animated person.
I'll tell Kate next time I talk to her. Hey, thank you, Tom. Nice to talk to you.
Thank you.
I'll tell you what I did. I bought the 13-inch MacBook Air. I mean, I couldn't resist. It will, you know, it should be a lot faster. And that's, the Airs are so nice and thin. I love Retina, though. I'm with Tom on that. I love that super high-res display. And those of us who use iPads and iPhones are now used to very high resolution. Actually, almost everything now. My Galaxy S4 is a very high. You measure it in dots per inch or pixels per inch, and the Galaxy S4, the HTC One, we're talking more than 400 pixels per inch, very high resolution. Retina is a marketing term Apple uses. What they mean by it is at normal operating distance, you can't see the dots. The dots are invisible. Of course, on a big screen TV, because it's 10 feet away, you can't see the dots. So I guess you could say a big screen TV is a Retina display in that parlance. When you're talking about printing, 300 dots per inch is pretty much enough for the printed page held roughly arm's length. But with phones and smaller devices, we tend to be closer, and so you need more dots per inch. Anything over 400 dots per inch is, as far as I'm concerned, there's no dots. It's just crisp. It looks like a piece of paper. It's gorgeous. I think the term Retina is only used by Apple, and it's kind of meaningless because it isn't a number. It depends on how far away the screen is. It's whether you could see the dots or not. I guess I can live with a MacBook Air that is not Retina. I like to see a larger, I like to see more on the screen, I guess. I guess that's why I want a Retina display. 8888 Ask Leah. I'm glad we could talk about that. I do want to talk a little bit about the NSA stuff. I know there was a lot of interest. We talked some last week about it. More information coming out. My friend Steve Gibson, who's a security guru and does a show on our podcast network on a regular basis, did on his most recent podcast on Wednesday, he said, I figured it out. He said, I think I know what the NSA is doing. He gave, I think, pretty coherent reasons for that. And we'll talk about his suppositions. Nobody knows because you're not allowed to say if you get one of these requests from the federal government. You're not supposed to talk about it. But I'll talk about what I think, what Steve thinks the feds are doing, and how that impacts you when we continue. 8888-ASK-LEO. The website is techguylabs.com. Great place to go, not only for all the show notes for everything we talk about, but it's a great place to get our links to our chat room. Always fun to be in there. Throughout the show, the chat room is kind of the kids in the back of the class throwing spitballs at me, but also helping me out because they have a lot of good answers for these questions. So if you'd like to join them in the chat room, it's moderated, it's family-friendly, it's a lot of fun. TechGuyLabs.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK-LEO. So let me give you in a nutshell. We talked last week about this whole issue of the National Security Agency spying on Americans. They say it's not legal for us to spy on Americans. We can, you know, our charter is that we can only spy on foreigners. International calls and traffic. If we were to spy on Americans, it would have to be the FBI. I think that that isn't. There's going to be a lot of parsing of the language to make it possible to kind of misrepresent the situation. So I'm going to ignore all of that. Some number of federal agencies. Is almost certainly collecting electronic transmissions. The question is how much and with what oversight, how many warrants, and if it's something you should worry about. I think the evidence is very strong at this point that a federal agency or two, probably the NSA, is collecting almost all electronic transmissions. The slide, the PowerPoint slide we saw about PRISM said that they were getting data from all of the big internet companies, Google, Facebook, Microsoft, Skype, and collecting that data. No reason not to believe that. What Steve Gibson, our security guy, believes they're doing is a little different from what perhaps you've heard in the mainstream media, mostly because it requires some technical understanding of how the internet works for you to understand exactly what they're doing. It was originally asserted that This Snowden fellow, the whistleblower, said they can watch as you're typing. They can see exactly what you're doing. When you're on Google, they can watch you type. The feds can watch. The NSA can watch what you're saying as you type it. To which Google said they don't have access to our servers. Facebook said, are you kidding? No way. They have no access to our servers. They're not watching our servers. You know, it's possible for them both to be right. And this is what Steve Gibson figured out, and I think it's true. The NSA doesn't need direct access to Google's servers. It did have direct access, we know, in 2006 to AT&T's servers. AT&T's WorldNet internet service was tapped by the NSA. We found that out because of a whistleblower. They had a special room in the San Francisco offices of AT&T where they were collecting everything that went out over the internet from AT&T WorldNet subscribers. It's also presume they're doing the same with Verizon and other telcos, collecting all that information. Google says, not us. Well, Google may not know because it's very likely they're doing the same thing they did with the AT&T folks. They're splitting off the data, but instead of putting a wiretap in the Google servers, they're putting a wiretap just outside the Google servers where they join the internet. So every company like Google, Facebook, Microsoft, Apple, every company like that has to have a service that they get on the internet with, just like you and I do. They have an internet service provider. They may have many internet service providers. It's at the points where these companies join the public internet that they're vulnerable. They can be easily monitored, not by a subpoena or a national security letter to Google or Microsoft or Facebook, but by a national security letter to their internet service provider. And remember, the internet service providers or anybody served with a national security letter can't say anything to anybody. That's part of an NSL is, you know, we're asking for this information and you can't tell anybody we asked. That's how it works. So these companies are probably happy
that nobody's figured this out, and they're very glad to sit on their hands, and nobody's asked companies like Level 3 or big internet service providers, hey, is the NSA gathering data from you? Because they can't answer that honestly. I guess what they could say is, like, no comment, which is in effect an admission, right? I don't even know if they're allowed to do that. So if the NSA is tapping these companies, in effect tapping them as they would tap us as they join the internet, can they get everything that goes on in and out of Google? Yes, absolutely. They could see it all. So what are they doing with it? Well, it seems unlikely that they're sifting it for data. It's much more likely to me that they're collecting it, just saving it for a rainy day, putting it aside. That's why the National Security Agency is building a massive data center in Utah capable of holding what they say is 5 zettabytes of data, enough to store all the telephone and electronic transactions for months and months and months that happen into and out of the U.S. and even within the U.S. And all that has to happen is we're just going to collect it. And then if we get suspicious about somebody or we think something's going on, we can just look at it because we got it. We can just say, well, let's look back and see what happened. I would guess that they're also running some pattern matching software. Some of this stuff is very sophisticated. IBM even touts its ability to do this with Watson. Remember the computer that won Jeopardy? Watson has been used at least a few times by the federal government to sift through massive amounts of data looking for patterns, looking for terrorist activity. And it's effective. We have the means to do this. So it seems likely that the federal government's doing this. I would love it if they would be a little more public about it, because then you and I could have this debate. Well, is it okay? Recent poll said that more than half, 56% of all Americans said it's fine. If this protects us, we need them to do this. Do you worry that the federal government has access to all your electronic communications? Federal government says, well, you got nothing to fear if you're not doing anything illegal. That may not be the case. We've certainly seen the federal government misuse their power. Remember, J. Edgar Hoover was spying on Martin Luther King. You don't even have to look that far back to see the use of this kind of power by the federal government. So I would say be aware of the fact that it is very likely, I think this is safe to say, that your electronic communications, your email, your cell phone calls, are being recorded, set aside, stored by the federal government, that everything you do on the internet is being listened to in some form, and act accordingly. It's perfectly possible to use all of these services in an encrypted fashion where they may be able to collect data like who that you talk to somebody and at what time without actually hearing the call. That may be possible. There are all sorts of technologies. There's a program called CryptoCat, for instance, CryptoCat, that will allow you to use an instant messenger in complete privacy and security. No government agency can spy on it, but they can see that you are talking to somebody in an encrypted fashion. You can't hide that. You can encrypt your email, but they can see who you send email to and when. You can't hide that. Just be aware of it, I guess. It's a little worrisome, and I think that unfortunately it's so technical that it may be that this conversation about whether we want to have this happen or not is hindered by the fact that it's kind of a technical conversation. But I think I've described this in a way that you can explain this to your friends, perhaps your member of Congress, and say, hey, you know what? I think the federal government, the NSA, is wiretapping Google. That's basically it. They don't have to wiretap us individually. They just wiretap all of Google. And if they're doing that, is that something we want? That's the conversation. And I think that that's the reason Steve thinks this is true among, of course, there's a lot of evidence of it being done in the past and so forth, is the word prism. What does a prism do? It splits light into many pieces. What was the NSA doing? They were taking the fiber optic communications of AT&T and splitting it. One going out to the real world, one going to their data centers. It's a good code name. A little obvious. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo, back to the phones we go. Our next call is from Luke in Downey, California. Hi, Luke. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Okay, thank you. I have a serious problem.
Okay.
I have an iPhone, and then it got blocked because you enter the passcode too many times.
Oh, no. And you didn't know the passcode, and then it got locked down.
Right.
Oh, right. Loose. Why did you keep going when you didn't know it?
It's not my fault. It's the baby, 14 months old.
The baby did it.
Yeah.
I've had that happen, actually. I've had a nephew locked my stuff down because he really wanted to get in, and he kept trying a password. Now, I hope you didn't have it set that one of the settings is that it will erase the phone after 10 times.
Oh, really? No, I don't think so. I guess I can still receive calls because the phone's still active.
Yeah, I think it would be. But I don't think that means anything, because even if it were erased, it would be active.
Oh, okay. No, I don't think I'm that tech savvy that I would set it to erase.
I always do, by the way. I always say lock it after 10 attempts and erase it, because I figure if somebody's trying 10 times, it must be a bad guy. I didn't think about it. I didn't think about a 2-year-old.
Yeah, that's what my brother said. He's like, well, you know, that's what iPhone was designed.
So you want to know how to unlock a locked iPhone?
Yeah, because I never uploaded my phone to my computer.
Oh, no.
And it has all the baby pictures.
Oh, no. No, you're making it worse and worse.
Because the way to recover it is to
erase it and start over. But if you've got stuff on there you don't want to lose.
Right. Yeah.
So you didn't have iCloud turned on? Photo stream, anything like that?
No, and I guess you think about it afterwards.
Yeah. That's why I always, when I do my Carbonite ads, I say, I know you're going to want backup someday, but let's try to do it before you lose everything.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I would go to the Apple store and beg. That's what Truckee says in our chat room, and I think that's about the only chance you have. They may have a way that they can connect it up and get the data off of it.
Oh, it doesn't have to be like a back way, right?
Well, there doesn't have to be. I would. There might be. You got a suggestion? Okay. So here's a possibility. Is that going to work if you've got it locked out? One of our viewers. You work for Verizon. Okay. So one of our live studio audience members says if you connect it up to iTunes now, that's not going to work. I know exactly what I want. It's going to say I can't access the phone until you unlock it.
Right.
And at that point, you're going to say, but please. no, I think you're going to have to. I think you're going to have to bring it in. Did you ever? So you never connected it to iTunes?
I never did that either. No. No, because I just take pictures, and then I figure once the baby's asleep, I'll download them. And I never did.
Right.
Yeah.
I think the only. I think you need to take it to Obi-Wan Kenobi, a.k.a. the Apple genius, and hope that he can help you. Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope. Say that. Maybe he'll be a Star Wars nerd and he'll take pity on you. I don't know. I truthfully don't know if there is a back door. I really don't. I mean, there's a reason they do this. When you turn that on, the presumption is that you would only be if a bad guy got it, and they don't want a bad guy to be able to bring the phone into the store and say, hey, I got this phone, I accidentally locked it, could you unlock it for me? Right?
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah. That's how they were created.
Yeah, that's exactly. They even warn you. They even warn you. Don't do this. if you can prove it's yours, which you probably can.
And you can show them the child that didn't?
Yeah. Say, this kid did this. And you're very nice. Maybe bring them some chocolates. If there's a way, the genius will know, right? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know of a magic way to do it.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
At least I tried. Thank you.
Yeah, don't give up. Don't give up. Bring it to the Apple store. There's one nearby.
Okay,
really? You want those
really nice neighborhood.
Yeah, you want those baby pictures. You do.
Yeah, and I don't want to go big for my relatives.
No. Yeah. It's embarrassing, but it's not your fault. It was the baby's fault.
Yeah, it actually was.
Yeah.
People don't believe me.
So just for future reference, turn on iCloud. You can create a free account. It's free. You get, I think, 5 gigabytes for free. And turn on the photo stream. And then every picture you take is immediately uploaded to a private storage area that only you have access to. And then if this happens again, it's easy because you can wipe the – you just start over. You plug the phone and say, forget it. Start over.
Yeah.
And then
yeah,
which you can do right now, but you'll lose whatever's on it.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. I'll just tell the kid, you know, he was born at 2.
Wait a minute. That's not – it's all the baby pictures? Like every picture you ever took?
Yeah, because when he was born, I just took my iPhone to the hospital, and that's what we used. Yeah,
cause
it was just easier.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
I was hoping it would be the genie in the bottle, but...
But you never, and you never connected it to iTunes?
No. No, because I got it when I got the baby.
Right.
So I'll get a new phone, new baby, it'll be easy, blah, right. blah, blah.
Right, right. Yeah, because if you'd ever connected it, it might have been backed up.
Yeah, that's what my little brother was saying, too.
If you enter the passcode 6 or more, I'm looking at Apple's website. If you enter the passcode 6 or more times wrong, the following message will pop up. iPhone is disabled. Does it say try again? No. After too many attempts, yeah. It says device is disabled. Connect to iTunes. Does it say that?
Yeah, but it says enter the passcode on your phone.
And then it wants you, when you connect it to iTunes, enter the passcode. Is the passcode changed?
No. No.
Oh, okay. Well, then I think you could connect. So I think, do you have iTunes on a computer?
Yeah.
Okay. I think what you can do is connect it up to iTunes, and it'll say, I can't talk to this phone because it's locked.
Right.
Then you enter what you know to be the correct passcode.
Right.
And then I think it will unlock and copy your data.
Okay.
Try that.
Okay, I'll try that.
Okay? I think that I think that will work.
Let's hope.
I cross my fingers for you. And if not, then definitely bring it to the genius and let them try to figure it out. So, okay. So that's – and that would work against somebody stealing your phone, right? Because they still would have to know the right passcode. So you connect it up to iTunes. A bad guy steals a phone, tries 10 times. Why he would try 10 times, I don't know. But he tries 10 times, and the phone says, sorry, I'm disabling myself. Now, let's hope you didn't set it up to wipe the phone after that, because you can be set that way. I set my phone that way. So now you connect it up to iTunes. It says, I'm sorry, I can't sync with this until you unlock it. And at that point, it doesn't care that you've just tried 10 times. It just unlocks it? All right. All right. My brain trust in the studio thinks that that will work. We'll put a link to this. Apple note HT1212 that says what to do in our show notes, techguylabs.com. And at that point, turn on photo stream. Oh, yeah. And I don't know. And then what should she do? She should be able to see it, and then it should open a photo app. If you're on a Mac, it would open iPhoto. If you're on a PC, it might open a camera app. All the photos should show up in a window, and you can just copy them over. Yeah. All right. Want to get those pictures. Even if it's locked, it'll do that. Yeah. Do it on a PC, then.
Because it gives the option of...
Yeah. All right. Our brain trust, I think, has solved your problem, Luce. I hope they have. And then... I hope you didn't check that extra box that says, and if somebody tries 10 times and fails, erase the phone. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the... Tech guy trying to solve your computer problems one call at a time. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, you want to talk high tech, I'm here. We could talk about the NSA surveillance program too. Whatever's on your mind. Some wag in the chat room said for that last caller, Luce, who was afraid she'd lost all the baby pictures because her iPhone wasn't backed up. Just call the NSA. They've got copies. I wonder how you could get that from the NSA. If there's like, would you have to file in triplicate? What would be the protocol? look, I know you've been saving all my data, so I just really need this. I hope. You know, this would be the best way to fight something like that. I know there are lawsuits going on. There's big class action suits and so forth. Ron Paul, I think, filed a big lawsuit. No.
What?
Bury him with trivia. Just everybody call him and say, hey, I threw out my a copy of my diploma that I'd put on my hard drive. I just need that. Can you just, I know you got a backup there in Utah. Can you just give me a copy? And just, if they're flooded with a million phone calls, they're pretty much, they're going to say, stop, forget it. Let's just stop. No more. These people are annoying.
The world needs more red tape.
We're not going to save you. You guys don't deserve to be saved. We'll spy on someone else. You guys, you're a bunch of whiny losers. That's what they should. That's what they would say.
It's good to know somebody at the NSA.
Oh, they're going to be movies, you know. Movies galore. Actually, the funny thing is, if you've really been paying attention, this is not a surprise. We've been talking about programs like Echelon, which was a program that the British government even admitted to. It was the UK, Australia, New Zealand, the United States, monitoring all electronic traffic, looking for keywords, you know, watching the river go by and looking for the words bomb and things like that. And they've admitted to this stuff. This has been going on for years. What's the first thing Jason Bourne does when the girl gets in the car and she's all rattled because they've been shooting at her? He takes her cell phone and he throws it out the window. You've been, this thing, this phone in your pocket, it was made for spying. Made
George
for
Clooney
it.
George Clooney does it in The American, too, right?
The American, first thing he does.
Because he doesn't trust his boss. He's
right.
Like,
smashes the phone.
Track me.
It's in the common knowledge department. That's Heather Haman. Sorry, Mom. Gosh. Heather Hamantosh. She's a smart cookie. And she has another call for us. Who should I talk to next, Heather?
Well, I feel like it's a natural transition to go to Richard in Whitehall, Montana. Because of everything we're talking about, we're like, are you sure you want to?
You sure you want this? Thank you, Heather. Hi, Richard. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo.
Hey, Richard.
Yes, the more I hear about this, the less I want to get involved in it.
This is why people move to Montana.
Well, my kids say I've been in the dark ages for too long. So, anyway, my predicament is I did not have internet service and I did not have cell phone coverage. And I'm asking about satellite internet.
Ah.
What is your opinion on it?
If you're in a very rural area where you cannot get internet from the big fat pipe coming in your house, and there's two, there's the phone system and there's the cable system.
I am at the end of the landline, right. And I've tried internet, and I get like 24 what I get.
So what happens with DSL, which is the phone company's form of internet, is once you're past a couple of kilometers out from the central office, it really slows down. And at some point, does not even exist. So if you're more than a mile and a half away from town,
is to go satellite.
Yeah, you're going to go satellite. Now, there are a number of choices here. I'll tell you the downsides on satellite. First, the equipment is expensive because you have to buy a little mini dish, right? You can't use the existing dish to do this.
No, correct.
There's also a downside in terms of speed and more upstream than downstream. It could be pretty fast downstream, but upstream is going to be somewhat limited because if you think about it, you're uplinking to a satellite from your house. There's also lag. There's a certain amount of time it takes to get the data from the satellite to you and back up again. So where that really hits you is in two things, is in gaming, because with gaming, a lot of lag makes it impossible to do a game with somebody else on the internet.
But,
what may matter more to you, you don't sound like a big gamer, but what may matter more to you is Skype or voice over the internet. There's going to be a lot of lag. You know, you'll say hello. 2, 3, 4, hello. So if you're just surfing the internet or getting web pages or email, no big deal. Now, there are different kinds of satellite. The best quality, in my opinion, is provided by a company called Exceed, EXEDE.com.
Okay.
They have a variety of plans, but they can get some really good speed.
Okay.
If you're willing to pay for it. So, and they also, and this is another problem with satellite providers, all of them have pretty severe bandwidth caps because there's a limited amount of bandwidth they can pass over the satellite.
Okay.
So I would look at Exceed. They're sometimes sold under the name Wild Blue.
Okay. I get flyers from them all the time.
Yeah. That Wild Blue loves people in Montana.
I've also got from Hughes Network, and then I've also got flyers from like Dish Network that say they do it.
Yeah, I am not as fond of the Hughes and the Dish solution as I am of Wild Blue. Exceed is Wild Blue's fastest service. If you can get Exceed there and you're willing to pay the price, which is not insignificant, I think at least you're online. You probably don't need the highest, you could get the $50 plan, which is 10 gigabytes a month.
Okay.
That's probably fine for you. That's 50 bucks a month, but...
I realize, and with weather conditions, I lose it too.
Yeah, if it rains, you got to make sure you have a clear view of the southern sky. That's where their bird is.
Yeah.
In rural areas, this is about your choice. One other possibility, and... You probably know better than I, if you can get cellular data, high-speed cellular data, 3G or 4G.
I do not have any cell coverage out there.
No cell coverage at all is going to leave you out in that one.
Yeah.
A lot of rural areas do have, oddly enough, 3G and 4G. It's also expensive, but it might be better service, less latency.
Okay. Well, I got to try and make the kids happy here pretty soon.
They want to talk to you. They want to know you're all right.
They aren't into writing letters anymore.
Write letters. Come on.
Well, I sure do.
Good for you. I'm glad you're keeping that art alive. Do you use a quill pen with that?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Ben Franklin would be proud.
They still make those.
Hey, it's great to talk to you.
I appreciate it.
I bet where you live is gorgeous. Is there a river nearby? Do you fly fish?
Oh, yes.
Just the best.
I'm the Jefferson.
I love it. I'm jealous. Hey, thanks.
Okay, thank you
Take care. Only reason I don't live in a place like that is lack of internet. It's like the first thing. I need internet. I need high-speed internet. But, boy, it's gorgeous. That's the price you pay, right? It's a direct corollary between the number of people who live somewhere and the varieties of internet access there are. But, you saw this Google Loon, Project Loon, right? I don't know if they're even serious. This almost feels like an April Fool's joke. If it weren't in the middle of June, I'd be worried. They want to put internet access all over the world with giant balloons. What? They want to put balloons. It's called Project Loon, probably rightly so. They think it's possible to build a ring of balloons flying around the globe on the stratospheric winds, 50,000 feet up, that provide internet access to the Earth below. Now, I don't know how this would be superior to satellites. A little closer, I guess. Crazy, huh? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 99 Luftballons. Google's planning to send up quite a few more. I don't know if this is serious. I mean, I know it's serious, but I don't know if they're going to pursue this. Project Loon. You know, it must be amazing to be a company so big, so powerful, so rich, that you can have this whole team called Google X. They just do crazy stuff, like self-driving cars. That came out of Project X, Google X. So did the Google Glass project. This loon idea is truly loony. They want to send balloons up 50,000 feet, not attached to anything, by the way. They're just floating around like weather balloons, following the stratospheric winds, providing access to the internet literally to every square mile on the planet, as long as you can see the balloon. I'm not sure how fast. I'm not sure if they're going to charge for it. I'm not sure how the balloons are getting internet themselves, frankly. A lot of questions. Apparently, my friend Trey Ratcliffe, who's been on this show sometimes, he has a website, Stuck in Customs. He was down in New Zealand, where he lives. And Google invited him to go out as they tried to put some balloons up there. He says that a more technical video is coming from Google. Because there's a lot of unanswered questions to this. But they launched a number of balloons in New Zealand, Te Kapo, New Zealand. And he was there taking pictures. Just wild. 99 balloons. Oh, there is a video. Okay, so the Google site, google.com/loon, has a video that explains more. How do they, I haven't been able to watch the video yet, and the chat room probably will have to fill me in on this. The technology.
The balloon thing seems like an NSA project.
The technology is not completely clear to me. They did the pilot over New Zealand. Balloon-powered internet for everyone. Sounds like a bunch of hot air, says Tech Dino. Yeah, you might be right. I don't understand how they're going to have to get the internet up to them. I can understand how you can get it back down to you. I mean, it's not that different from satellite. It's just cheaper. They're doing something similar in Africa already with balloons to get internet access to some parts of Africa. So it's not completely nutty. Just a little nutty. 12 miles above the earth. Very early stages. The idea is to get in. You know, Google makes money. The more people on the internet, the better for Google. They don't, you know, that's how they make their money. They're not saying how much they've spent or how much customers will be charged. They're just trying it out. The balloons are 49 feet wide. Big. They're stationing ground stations that would bounce internet signals up to the balloons. The ground station's about 60 miles apart. The signals would hop backward from one balloon to the next as the balloons move, because the balloons are moving over you, so they're kind of like a cell phone system, the handoff. Solar panels attached to the inflatables would generate the electricity, so they're completely self-sufficient. Each balloon would provide internet service for an area about 780 square miles. It's twice the size of New York City. And because they're so high, even if you're, you know, in a mountain valley, you still probably could see the balloon. Who knows? It's just amazing. We live in interesting times, don't we? 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. Richard in Santa Clarita. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Richard.
Hi. How are you, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm great. So, doesn't everybody, I have a blog and a podcast. And,
good. No, not everybody, but many.
Yeah. And I've also started doing these little animations there's a site called Go Animate that allows you to make your own cartoons. Anyway, when I'm on the road, I use Audacity and FileZilla then to upload my podcasts. And when I'm on the road, I'm using a netbook, which really is just way too slow.
Yeah.
And so I was going to get a laptop, but I'm wondering if I can use a Surface tablet to do instead of a laptop to run Audacity and...
Yeah. So Surface RT, which is the ARM-based version of Microsoft Windows 8, would not work. Because it's not an Intel chip, it's an ARM chip. Audacity will run on regular Windows, so you need a Surface Pro.
Okay. And those are a little more expensive than the cheaper laptop.
Yeah, they're almost twice as much, yeah.
Oh, really? Okay. And then my other question is, I have all these stats. I have my Blogger stats. I use Feedburner, so
yeah.
I've got that, and Stitcher, and YouTube, and...
Yeah.
Analytics. Is there any way to bring all these things together in one place?
You know, there's a new product, and I a little disclaimer, they are an advertiser on the podcasts, called SumAll, that does exactly what you want to do. It takes Google Analytics and data from a lot of... It's really good for somebody who's got a podcast or a blog or an internet presence of some kind, and they want to take a look at what it all means. And what's in, you know, and it will tie together Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, Google+, MailChimp, Constant Contact, and they're adding more people all the time. Amazon, YouTube, BigCommerce, PayPal, eBay. And the idea, Foursquare, Bing, you know, the idea is it's business intelligence. This is something that's been available for a long time in big business. In fact, it's really changed American business. The collecting data about everything that happens in the business, how the widgets are made, how much they cost to make, how much they sell for, where they sell, how our metrics are on the website, what our social media attempts are doing, and ties it all together in a dashboard an executive can look at and say, okay, I see this is working, this isn't working, we need, you know, digest it in a way that makes it easier to understand. That's what SumAll is designed to do for free, believe it or not, for normal people.
And what was this called?
SumAll.com. Now, when you click the try button, they show a pricing plan, but right now it's free. It's all free. I think at some point this may become a... there may be some attempt to make this into a freemium business where you get some services for free and you pay for the extra stuff. But, you know, I've talked to the founders of this, and, you know, they made a little money and a big exit in the on the internet, and so they're just having fun right now. But I think it's really interesting the way you can tie together your social efforts with your downloads, with perhaps your online store, and see how everything ties together, including all those Google Analytics. I like it. SumAll.com. Hey, thanks for the call. Good luck. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Back to the phones we go. Wyatt is on the line from Kings Mountain, North Carolina. Hi, Wyatt. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, pleasure to speak with you, sir.
Well, my pleasure. Thanks for calling.
Leo, I've got a couple of questions. Hopefully, you've got a little bit of time to answer. The first one, I want to make this clear. I'm sure you've heard the term fanboy, right?
Yes, sir.
Well, I'm a Microsoft fanboy.
You're one of the few. Wait a minute, there's one more in here.
Well, I've got two Xboxes, 360s.
Oh, I'll give you that. I'm an Xbox fanboy. I can go for that.
Windows 8 phone.
There, I mean, okay, yeah.
I've got Windows 8 on my computer, and then, you know, I see shortly before E3, it comes out, and I'm a huge gamer. Majority of my free time is spent gaming. And then I hear Xbox come out with this slap to the proverbial face of gamers with the DRM BS, for lack of a better term. And I said to myself, and I said to my buddies, before any of this came out, I said, there's no way Xbox is going to do this. If they do and then Sony doesn't do it, they're just handing the console battle over to Sony. They're killing the Xbox. And then it comes out that the Xbox is doing this, and Sony's not.
Yeah, let me tell people what it is, because people may not be clear on this. The whole issue is over used games. You buy a game, it's on a disc, you play the game for a little while. The problem with all games is after a while, you use it up. You're done. You've played it. Very few games, like movies, you want to keep forever. In the past, there's been a very brisk business in used games. You go back to GameStop, and they buy the game back from you. Somebody else buys it. Or you give it to a friend. Maybe you're not even trying to make money off it. You're just giving it to a friend. And this is very much like music when you buy a CD and you want to sell it or give it away. There's no restriction on doing that, despite the fact that the music industry has for years tried to do it. So the way Xbox is going to be designed, and this partly is because all the games will be copied to the hard drive. So they may come on disc, you may download them, but they will be copied to the hard drive.
To the cloud, right?
Yeah, well, both the cloud and the hard drive. You have a 500 gigabyte hard drive in that Xbox One. So yeah. To speed things up, they're going to put everything on the hard drive, which means you can put away the disc. But the problem with that, of course, they want to make sure that you own it. So once a day, the Xbox One will call home and say, hey, does he own it? Okay, he can keep playing it. So that's problem one a lot of people have. It has to be on the internet at least once a day.
And I've got a big problem with that myself, too. I tend to keep my internet connected, but, you know, sometimes things come up, and I may go out without internet.
And Microsoft's boneheaded answer to that is, you should just buy an Xbox 360, the old Xbox. That was their answer. That's a stupid answer, by the way. Okay, so that's the first part. Now, I have to say, some of this probably is put upon them by the game developers. Although you make an interesting point. If that's the case, why doesn't Sony do it, too? So here's the problem, though. You can no longer hand off a game. You can give a game to a friend if they are on Xbox Live and they've been your friend for more than 30 days.
And the game can only be given away once.
And once.
Once the game's been given away, it's
can't
gone.
Be given away again. You cannot resell it. You can't just bring it to GameStop and say, I'm done here. You know, give me $15 and you can sell it to somebody else. You can't do that.
Unless the publisher allows it.
Unless the publisher allows it. Now, what I'm hoping is that publishers will bypass this system and say, obviously, this is going to really annoy our fans. Now, but my experience with companies like EA is they don't really care.
Yep, exactly. They're going to try to get as much money out of it as possible. Yeah, exactly. EA, Activision, yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, there's all sorts of issues around this. The good news is Sony has said, man, we're not going to have any of those restrictions. You could do the same thing you've always done. Give it away, sell it, whatever you want. Anybody can play that game. It's no longer registered to you or attached to you in any way.
And that puts me in a tenuous position, Leo, because as an admitted Microsoft fanboy, I've got to get a PlayStation. And that's just...
Might I point out the PlayStation is also $100 less.
Yeah, but
$399 compared to $499. Now, with the Xbox One, you're also getting about $100 Kinect. So that's the difference in price. You're forced to, by the way, have this Kinect motion capture video camera device.
But now, I mean, do you see, Leo, the question that I've got, and then I've got one more if you don't mind. Do you see Microsoft backing off of this? Because I don't see any way that the Xbox One can be a success now. Especially with Sony going out there very wisely and saying, hey, do you want to trade games? Let's show you how it's done here.
Here's the deal. Microsoft is gambling, and they're probably gambling correctly, that it's not going to matter to most people. Remember that you're a serious gamer, obviously.
Yeah. We're a very small percentage, I'm aware.
Yeah, exactly. The people who buy these game consoles, one would think those are serious gamers. They're not. And so Microsoft's taking a chance. Microsoft's making a gamble, making a bet that the most people who buy this don't even know or care about a used game market. And they might be right on that. I think that people do care about $100, however.
Yeah.
That might have more impact than anything else.
So you don't think that there's a single chance of Microsoft coming back off of this?
Well, I shouldn't say that because I thought Windows 8, that they would never back off the idea of a boot to desktop, and they did back off because people really complained.
Yeah.
And certainly people will complain about this, but the question Microsoft's taking a chance on is, will it be anything more than serious gamers? And hardcore gamers who want to play, you know, Gears of War and Halo and other Microsoft exclusives are going to buy an Xbox regardless.
Their exclusives haven't been running as strong lately. The main reason that I buy Xbox is, first off, once again, I'm a Microsoft fanboy. But the only exclusive I'm interested in is Forza, Gears of War, Halo. I could care less about those.
Right.
I could play Battlefield 4 on PlayStation 4.
Again, this is a hardcore gamer talking. I don't know if normal people care. The other thing that is really probably the more important point is that discs are going to go away anyway.
Yeah, I understand that that's you know, it's coming down the pipe. But does it have to be thrust upon us in this way? I mean, it is a slap to the face of the core audience for the Xbox, which... The core audience is the hardcore gamers. But my next question, and then I'll let you go because I know you got a ton of other callers. And I'm sorry, I've tried to call before.
No, I'm really glad you got in because I do think this is something that is bothering a lot of people. I'm seeing a lot of traffic on the internet about this.
Well, my next question is, I mentioned that I have a Windows Phone 8. I've got a two-pronged thing here. First off, what is your opinion of Windows Phone 8? And do you think that Windows Phone 8 is going to be able to hold its own against the iOS 7?
I like Windows Phone 8 a lot. I'm holding in my hand the Verizon and Lumia 928.
Oh, that's the one I want. I got the 920 from AT&T.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. There's not that much of a difference. It's a Xeon Flash is the biggest difference.
I just like the body shape difference.
Yeah, it's a little squarer. Great cameras on these. The hardware is spectacular. I think Microsoft Windows Phone 8 is quite good. The issue is it came late. Remember, they came late to the party. iPhone was well established, and Android phone is well established before Windows phone came along. And I think people who've invested a lot of time and effort learning the platform and buying apps for iPhone or Android are not likely to move to Windows Phone 8. So you've got to capture the new users. And even there, it's hard because they look to their friends and they all have iPhones or Android phones. And they actually, I shouldn't even say Android phones, Galaxy phones, because that's really the dominant phone. And they just say, well, I'm not going to get a Windows. You know, for instance, my ex-wife went. I went, took her to AT&T. She needed a new phone. She'd lost her iPhone. The iPhone insurance that AT&T sold was terrible, and they weren't responsive. So I said, "Well, you need a phone. We're not leaving without a phone." And she shocked me. She said, "Well, what about this Galaxy S4? I kind of like it better than the iPhone. It's a little easier in my hand." I said, "Well, you should also look at the Windows." She didn't even want to look at the Windows phone. It was very straightforward. Nor, by the way, did the AT&T rep mention the Windows phone.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, my question is, in your book, you know, you're an expert at this. How do you think it holds up and compares to the behemoth of Android?
I think it's quite good for, especially for people who haven't tried a smartphone before. The lack of applications is going to hurt it. I mean, it's a beautiful phone. I love, you know, there's a lot to like about it. It doesn't feel as sophisticated as Android. I mean, this is very much like Windows 8, where you have your start screen, your front page, and then you have another page with all your apps here. And, you know, of course, the problem is there's several problems. First of all, this is a very long scroll. It's a pain. Now, if you install enough apps, which I have, then you start getting, you start A, B, C, so you can start scroll down and choose by letter, I think. You're supposed to see the letters at some point. Well, maybe not. And then there it is. You tap a letter, you can say, oh, I want to jump to V. I think this is not the ideal way to do things. So you really want to put everything on your home screen, but you can't put too much on your home screen because then it's a long scroll. I love the live tiles. I think it's smooth. I think it's fast. I think when apps work, they work really nicely. They really look pretty. But it's not so much better that people are going to say, well, oh, this is so much better, I'm going to get rid of my iPhone or my Galaxy. Yeah, it's a beautiful phone, right? But what did you end up choosing?
Well, I wound up getting the 5 because I worked for Best Buy at the time.
Right.
I could have upgraded to my 5 because my 4 had been acting up. Right.
So you were already in the iPhone space. What you would have found quite quickly, you go, oh, where's Instagram? Oh, there's no Instagram. Where's Path? No, there's no Path. And the camera on this is spectacular, and the camera app is very good. So, there's a lot to love about this phone. I mean, it has a dedicated camera button, so I can, I can snap pictures very quickly. It has a bunch of camera plugins. They kind of treat the camera apps as, they call them, lenses. So you can get these. These are just standalone apps, really, but it's kind of fun. I think this is very nicely done. And I think people try it. They're going to like it aesthetically a lot. But then they're going to say, but where's Instagram? Where's Snapchat? Where's this and that? And they're really, while they have a lot of apps and a lot of the gaps have been filled, there's still a ton of apps that come out of Android and iPhone and don't. Well, you see, and I actually, I reset it, so I haven't customized. But I usually I will cut it down considerably. Yeah, maybe, huh? This is how it comes out of the box, you know, when you log in your Microsoft account. There's a lot of stuff, right?
If you look at the default Android or Apple.
It's not nearly this way. And what's smart is Samsung has put this new home thing on here. They put this, and I did this for Jennifer because she was a little scared about the home screen. It was a little elaborate for her. So this is a very simple, and you can add apps to it. When people come into the Verizon store, you do this for them? Or? Oh, you're the call center, so you don't deal with it, yeah. But, the AT&T store, it was not set this way, but I immediately put it on the simple home for her. And she's very comfortable with this. She knows exactly, you know, the camera's here, the phone's here. It's very simple.
Exactly.
And then you get more sophisticated, it's not a problem to make it a little bit more sophisticated. Hope I didn't screw up my launcher by doing that. Oh, no! Tell me I'm not trapped in easy settings.
No!
Yeah, it's really good for a tech guy. Apply. Standard mode will be applied. Oh, it did. It rewrote my whole... Oh, I know why. I changed back to the Samsung launcher, TouchWiz. So I'll just put back my other launcher. We did. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You know, I don't really have a handle on that console game market. I think it's a very interesting story, and I don't know who buys Xboxes and PlayStation 4s. If you're a really serious gamer, I'm a serious enough gamer that I have both. I mean, that's almost a $1,000 investment. Then you have to buy games. But if you're a really serious gamer, I think you buy both. And I think the vast majority of people are not that serious, and they buy Nintendo Wiis. So there. 8888 Ask Leo. Last segment of the show. Actually, while we're here, I should say hello to my good friend and hardcore fanboy, gaming fanboy, Dick D. Bartolo.
Yeah, exactly.
What prestige level are you at now in Call of Duty?
I'm up to Pac-Man Black Belt. There is a black belt in Pac-Man, right?
Absolutely.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. After you eat Ms. Pac-Man, you get it. Dick D. Bartolo is the Giz Wizzy. He joins us every week to talk about gadgets. You may know the name. Yes, it's that Dick D. Bartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer for almost 5 decades now. It's great to have you on, Dick. Did you see what I got? I got a new gadget. I kind of like this. This is the new AirPort Extreme from Apple. It looks like a... I don't know. What do you think that is? It looks like a
pepper grinder.
Yes.
Oh, the new Wi-Fi pepper grinder.
This is it, with Wi-Fi built in.
Wow.
Yeah, pepper grinder and Wi-Fi. It's the strangest
nice.
Thing. Yeah. Anyway.
And what does it do?
It's never mind. It's something to do with Wi-Fi. Hey, what do you got for us?
Oh, I got something that I talked about on the GizWiz, and by this time, I think you might own one of them.
I did. I got it.
Oh, okay. It's from Jackery, and I talked about two gadgets. I only have one of them, but after I started talking about it, I thought, I should have bought the other one.
It came today.
So, okay. It's the Jackery Bar. So it's a 5,600 milliamp external battery pack. The company says, I have no way to measure this. It is the world's smallest power bank with 2.1 output. It's an aluminum case, very good looking. There's a little nifty 2-LED flashlight built into it.
So you would you'd carry this in your pocket. When your cell phone dies, you just plug it into this and it would recharge it, basically.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And the great thing is it's on sale on Amazon for $39, $39.95. But while I was putting stuff up on my website, I actually went to the Jackery Giant.
That's what I bought.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to go big or go home.
You're going bigger. Yeah. That's $10 more. So $49.95.
Yeah, but it's 10,000 milliamp hours.
Yeah, 10,400 milliamps.
Well, when you get to that number, you know, this thing will charge, recharge your iPhone, for instance, 4 or 5 times. It'll charge your iPad a couple of times. I mean, this is pretty amazing. And it's the size of a deck of cards.
No, okay, yes. I mean, the other one can go into a shirt pocket. This one...
You could, but you'd look like you had a left breast.
Yeah.
But other than that...
If you have a
and if you're a woman, then it'd be a mess.
Perfect.
Yeah, perfect. Just be great.
And they're at jackeryusa.com.
Jackery. I just got mine. I'm charging it up. But I think I like the idea of having this if you're going on a hike or something. Obviously, if you're near a plug, you just plug the phone in. But if you're on here's a good example. You're on a long flight. And you want to listen to your phone for 12 hours, and it only gets 8 hours. You just plug this thing in,
absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And they're good looking,
and it's not expensive.
No, $49.95.
Yeah. Dick D. Bartolo, he's expensive, but you can help support his habit by going to gizwiz.biz. He puts all the show notes up there, including links to all the stuff he talks about on our show. And you know what's nice? He even gives away copies of Mad Magazine, autographed.
I tried selling them. It didn't work.
No. So if you go to gizwiz.biz, that's the name of the website, gizwiz.biz, and then you click the What the Heck Is It contest, you'll see a picture of a gadget. We don't know what the heck it is. He knows. I presume he knows. He will give 12 autographed copies of Mad Magazine for the right answer, but 24 for the wrong answer. You decide which you want to give him. Be clever. That gives you a better shot at winning an autographed Mad Magazine.
Yeah.
Details, contest rules, and all that. You do it. It takes about 2 months. Every 2 months, you do this. And you're and you're playing for which Mad Magazine?
Oh, we'll be playing for the August issue of Mad.
And we haven't seen the cover yet, so we
have not seen.
Cannot
the cover.
Tell you what it will be on.
We're
the
trying to think of one.
Do you have? Do you know if you have something? You have not missed a Mad Magazine for 5 decades.
Oh, you know what? Yes, yes. Let's see. The August issue is Storage Wars.
Oh, fun! Your parody of Storage Wars.
Storage Wars.
How fun! What do you call it?
I think we ended up with Storage Bores.
You know, it's always good when they put war in the title because it makes it easy.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Star Bores.
Kind of you got it. You got it. Okay. So I repeated myself once in 43 years. Okay.
Dick writes a lot of those great parodies in Mad Magazine. It's so great to have him on every week. Thank you, Dick. Stick around. The Giz Fizz right after the radio show, and every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern time. We do the weekly Giz Whiz show. Dick and I come up with all sorts of crazy gadgets right here on the Twit Network, twit.tv. Thank you, Storage Boar.
Okay.
You know, you're the guy who should be in Storage Wars. You have a storage locker full with old gadgets.
Right. You know, you're absolutely right.
When he dies and somebody...
Oh, wait a minute. Well, look at that. Oh.
I have this was sent by a fan.
Is that the XS70?
No. This is an older Polaroid. This is a Polaroid Land Camera 430. This is a piece of history, you know. This was how I don't know who, you know, this is, you would see people walking around with this. You knew they were serious about something.
Yeah, I think I have film in the warehouse for that.
Do you? We should try it. See if it
works.
Well,
I have to scrape all the chemicals off the shelves. It's leaked badly.
Thank you, Dickie D. Have a great one.
Bye.
All right, take care. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, and I think we have time for one more. Let's go to Jim. In Voorhees, New Jersey. Hi, Jim. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Listen, I got a quick last question for you.
Sure.
I'm collaborating with a lady who's writing a book, and it's a historical book, and she wants some old pictures.
Yeah.
I've scanned them at 320, I think it's 300 DPI.
Okay.
And she replied, and she says, could you put them on a TIFF file? Now, what the heck's a TIFF file?
So probably this won't be any trouble at all. You're on Windows?
I got an XP.
Yeah. So ErfanView is free. E-R-F-A-N, ErfanView. A TIFF file is a form of uncompressed image. I don't know how you scan them. You may have scanned them as JPEGs. More likely, you scan them as BMPs.
I think they're JPEGs.
JPEGs. If you were going to scan more of them, just look in your scanning software, and you could change the setting to scan it out to TIFF. TIFF is preferable because it's not as compressed as JPEG. They're bigger files. But they don't have JPEG will cause some strange artifacts sometimes in the background. So a TIFF, you won't have any of that.
I think she wanted narration, and she thought that with a TIFF file, you put narration with the photos.
That's some software she uses might want a TIFF file, but in most cases, a JPEG will work just as well.
Yeah. So what was that again?
IRFAN. I said it wrong. IRFAN view. And it will just import the JPEGs and convert them to TIFF. In future, scan as TIFF would be a better choice so that you don't have to do the conversion and the quality would be maintained. Hey, thanks for the call. Thanks for listening. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, if you go from JPEG to TIFF, all the artifacts are just preserved perfectly. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad and iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.